Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're broadcasting live today from the Wilma H. Schirmeyer Olentangy River Wetland Research Park, hereafter referred to as the Olentangy River Wetland Research Park. It's tucked away in a bend of the Olentangy River. It's one of the nation's premier wetlands research centers, and the OSU folks here are proud of their wetlands development, and they want to share what they've done with the community. So we're here today to talk about that. May is Wetland Month at Ohio State University, so we're going to talk about what they do and what OSU wants to do to connect the center here with the rest of campus and Central Ohio. The story begins with the river, and joining us today to talk about that is Bill Mitch. He's director of the Olentangy River Wetland Research Park. Welcome to the show, Bill.
Thank you, Ann.
I should say welcome back to the show.
Yes, thank you.
Also joining us in this segment is Jeff Cox. He is with the Sierra Club and also works with FLO. It's the Friends of the Lower Olentangy Watershed, and it's a nonprofit organization dedicated to keeping the Olentangy River and its tributaries clean and safe. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Bill, about 5 years ago, you wrote a letter to the governor of Louisiana, telling her at the time that it would be a mistake to drain the water from the wetlands there and start over. And I'm wondering now, in light of the BP oil disaster, what you'd recommend at this point.
Well, what I recommend to Louisiana is do no harm, because I think what is happening down there and the excitement to try to solve the problem, especially after the oil is out. It's one thing to try to cap it. Of course, that's where they should be putting all their energies to capping the oil. But once it's out, you can do more harm than good if you do the wrong thing. And there's some projects down there right now that I'm just a little skeptical that they're not going to stop the oil spill anyhow, but they're also going to be a relic left over long after the oil's gone. Particularly some levees and dikes that they're talking about ringing Louisiana with just to protect from the oil. And once they're gone, their levees and dikes will still be there, and they will be perhaps a disaster to the wetlands down there.
You know, folks know that oil spills are a bad thing. We know that kind of anecdotally. We know that from the Valdez disaster.
Right.
But this is very close to closer to home for most Americans, especially. It's going to affect drastically the wetlands in Louisiana and elsewhere along the Gulf. What is the value of that, and what is the
value of an oil spill? Is
the value of the wetlands.
Oh, the value of the wetlands,
yeah.
Of course, are incredible for fisheries, for the offshore production of fisheries, for biodiversity in the area. For carbon sequestration, which is one thing we don't think about too much in wetlands. And so we're going to lose all those estuarine functions if the oil spreads up into the wetlands. Now, wetlands are very resilient. I have to begin with that point. And they will recover. So they will recover, unless, of course, they are never able to cap this thing, in which case the whole Gulf of Mexico will be just one big mass of oil. But assuming they can cap it, eventually the oil will dissipate and microbes will decay it. I kind of suggested this, and I would get in trouble in Louisiana for saying this, but if the spill had to happen anywhere, probably in the warm Gulf of Mexico with all the fertilizer we're sending down the Mississippi River, is probably the best place for degradation of oil on the planet. So they won't take much solace in that idea, but it's... The oil will degrade in that warm climate faster than it did, of course, up in Alaska.
What do you learn here at the research center that informs you for things like this when they occur?
Nature is pretty smart. That's what we learn. We learn that, yes, we can impact nature, but she'll rebound. She'll come back. The wetlands will take a hit from this oil, and hopefully not a bad hit, but they do rebound. They're able to recover. I think that's one of the things we've learned more than anything is just the power of Mother Nature, and that very often when you try to solve a problem, if you are overambitious and you want to do something and you spend a lot of money, you could do more harm than good. That's my caveat about the whole thing and about them trying to do this and do that down there. They could leave some relics behind that would cause more damage in the long run than actually the oil spill.
Well, the reason we're gathering today, particularly, is this afternoon you're going to entertain the Olentangy Scioto Ecosystem Corridor Symposium. Tell us what that's about.
Well, in general, we think the, especially through the campus, but starting with us, and we've suggested this idea that perhaps the City of Columbus and the Ohio State University could collaborate on a restoring the Olentangy River and the Scioto and basically connect us to the Grange Insurance Audubon Center, which is down in Whittier Peninsula, and have sort of a what we call blue-green corridor of restored rivers. Take the dams out, restore the riparian zone along the river, and just have this wonderful riverine setting with bike paths and people boating on the river and recreation and so on that we don't do now in the city. People don't think of the Olentangy as an asset. They think it's just a dirty old river. And part of the reason are the dams. And I think it's just a wonderful opportunity for us to put Mother Nature back through the city and have an absolutely wonderful corridor that many cities would envy.
Jeff Cox, what does the Friends of the Lower Olentangy Watershed think of this?
I think it's great. I think what Bill's talking about is something that's happening in other places, and it needs to happen here. Right now, what's hindering these projects from going forward is some of the dams that are in the area that need removed. I think it can happen, and we're surely for it. We're going to advocate for the same system. I think we need this in Columbus. We need it to people to get to the water, to have recreation, and restore it back to its natural beauty. And it's there. We've got the best place in the world here.
You know, we were talking earlier, and you noted, well, the irony that this is one of the premier wetlands research centers in probably the world, and that stretch of Olentangy around it is one of the most polluted.
Correct. And, you know, when we talk about the Gulf oil spill, I think of our area. There is 1 billion gallons of sewage is spilled yearly here within the city of Columbus. And this stretch of the Olentangy has one of the biggest accumulations of sewer overflows that there is. And holding that sewage back right now is the Fifth Avenue Dam. And we're advocating to get that dam out of there as soon as possible.
Is there a calculated risk in bringing people to the river as well and developing the corridor? It can be a double-edged sword, can it, Bill, as far as the research
part
goes?
Yeah, of course. I mean, we don't know that we espouse people swimming in the river after we take the dams out, but it will be better water quality. We do know that. And as they are able to divert some of these sewer overflows and as we take the dams out, the water quality improve. Boating surely it will be a avocation we would expect to see when the dams come out. Right now it's a dangerous river to boat on. You don't want to do that with those dams there. But if the dams were removed, I think we'd see people turn to the river. And then there's a very exciting plan that will be discussed this afternoon at our session that the university is considering of actually doing this, of featuring the river almost as a part of the corridors that goes through campus, making it a major feature of the campus rather than something that's just there dividing two parts of the campus.
Yeah, OSU landscape architect Stephen Volkman is going to join us in the second segment to talk about that. Jeff, I understand that the dams pose a danger to boaters. How do the dams affect the environment?
Well, they affect the natural flow right now of the river to let it go and flood out where it should flood out, the way nature was meant to be. And being in an urban environment, one of the biggest hindrances is holding back sewage. The water is so polluted behind the dams, especially the Fifth Avenue Dam, our area, that it's really hindering the water quality. The City of Columbus is working to eliminate those overflows. But we still need to get the dam out of there. The contamination of the river bottom also is pretty extreme.
Now, it's going to widen the river, though, won't it?
Some places will widen. It will take its own course. Some places it will meander, make different courses. But it will still stay within the same floodplain area.
Now, how does all of this affect what you do here, Bill, at the research center? Will it matter?
Well, of course. I mean, what we're yes. I mean, our idea here was a little. We're 50 acres, counting the river, and we were showing how the river and the floodplain are one system. Basically, that's what we're suggesting. We're espousing the idea of taking the dam out as part of that, of restructuring the river way, which includes the floodplains along the river and the river itself. And so the landscape that we have here at the Olentangy River could easily be a landscape, maybe not as wide, but perhaps very similar, throughout the straight down to the campus. And heck, let's just go all the way down to the Grain Center while we're at it. and that's what that's the natural river systems that we would have in this region, and it would be so beautiful. It would be the envy of every city in the world if we actually pulled this off.
Now, Jeff, this has to have been something you all have dreamed of for a long time. Why do you think the environment, no pun intended, is right for making it happen now?
Well, we know that the city of Columbus is in the process of cleaning up the water, getting the sewers out, and we knew from working with such a great university here and their plan for this Emerald Parkway to say, we knew it was right. We knew that we're at the point now where this can happen. We definitely are standing behind it. We think it's a grand plan, and we see it, that this is something that's feasible to happen.
Okay, we're going to take a short break. I just want to remind the listeners that we are live at the Olentangy River Wetlands Research Park at OSU. It doesn't necessarily feel like OSU all the time because it's a little separated from it, but they want to connect it to the university and to the city, and that's what we're here to talk about today. I want to thank Jeff Cox for joining us today and telling us about the Sierra Clubs and the flows, hopes and dreams for it. Thanks for joining us,
Thank
Jeff.
Thank you. It's been an honor.
And, Bill, you'll be back with us in the next segment, so
okay.
Stay tuned. And stay tuned to All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
So we don't have a million primaries this week. What's Idaho? Chopped liver? Political junkie Ken Rudin on that, the GOP win in Hawaii, Sestak's job offer, and we focus on Connecticut, where there's going to be a misspoken smackdown for the U.S. Senate. I'm Neil Conan, plus prep for 13 primaries coming in the next 2 weeks. Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation begins this afternoon at 2 o'clock right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. Currently 77 degrees in downtown Columbus at 10:19. Sunshine today and a high of 85. Clear skies tonight and a low of 62. More sunshine for Thursday and a high of 85.
Support for WOSU comes from the estate of Donald R. Glancy, whose life was enriched by public radio and television, and whose bequest seeks to encourage others to discover WOSU Public Media.
Nice.
Okay. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. If you're wondering, those are spring peepers. It is spring at the Olentangy River Wetland Research Park, and we're talking about the park today and how to connect it with the Ohio State University. And joining me in the studio, in our studio of the day, we're live at the research park in front of a beautiful wetland area that's not necessarily part of the research, is it, Bill Mitch?
The little pond that we're in front of, we're on the I call it the urban side of our wetland building, our site. So that's a pond for decorative purposes to greet visitors when they come here.
Okay. Also joining us, OSU landscape architect Steve Volkman. Steve, thanks for joining the show.
Thanks, Ann. Thanks for inviting me. It's a great day. Good job.
It's a beautiful day. We had all sorts of contingency plans in case it rained. We couldn't have asked for better weather. And again, Wetland Park Director Bill Mitch is with us as well. And we're talking about how to develop the area for the future. And OSU is a big part of that, Steve. What are the plan? The OSU has the One University Framework Plan, and how that has evolved and how it brings focus on the Olentangy River.
Well, you know, Ann, we've been working on, and we being the whole university, quite honestly, has been working on the One Framework Plan for about a year and a half now. And it really covers not just the physical planning, but programmatic planning and fiscal planning for the entire campus and the entire university. In terms of how the One University Framework Plan affects the river and the wetlands, I think it was really identified early on that the river is the geographical center of the campus. And instead of really turning our back on it like we've done for years, that we should celebrate it and really bring focus to the river, it's one of our few opportunities to create significant open space on campus. And so that's one of the things that the university is pursuing.
What is the history behind the university turning its back on the river? Is it because of the flooding problems, or why did the university not embrace it all along?
Well, I think for years they looked at High Street as the front door, and it's as simple as that.
Mm-hmm. So tell us about the part of the plan envisions the river becoming the oval of the future. And, of course, the oval of the present is the oval on campus by the union. What's the oval of the future mean?
Well, I think the plan looks at the river as this huge opportunity to create space. It suggests shifting Cannon to the west, removing parking, extending Cannon up to Lane Avenue, and then creating parkland between the river and Cannon. It would also, as the Lowhead Dam is removed, it would also remove the earth mounding that sits between the river and the new Cannon location. And so all of that would be passive recreation space, a space that is beneficial for the university and also the adjacent community. Also, you know, it provides an opportunity for research and learning. So we look at it as a real positive to put our energies there.
How big of a deal is it that the research park is here? Is that a part of the development process?
Well, I think, you know, it's been great having this research park here for so many years, and Dr. Mitch's work will be invaluable as we begin to develop the riverfront and, you know, establish plantings along the edge.
So, Bill, Mitch, who's going to talk about this today seminar.
At our symposium.
Symposium. Right.
Yeah. We're going to have a couple representatives who will be talking about the bigger scheme. We're actually going to have President Gordon Gee himself come and give the last word. So
the big shadow.
He will be here about 5:30. And we're also going to have the consulting firm, Sasaki Associates from Boston, who have agreed to come and give their presentation. I've seen it before. Steve, of course, is very familiar with their idea. It's just some beautiful ideas about focusing on the river, and they have great visuals. If anybody wants to see what the future of this campus could really be like, they should come out and see this presentation this afternoon.
What do you like about it, Steve?
Well, you know, Sasaki shows one image of the riverfront as a festival space. I mean, image was of game day and just hundreds, thousands of people down by the river. And that's sort of what I'm, you know,
get them out of
the
parking lots.
Yeah,
right?
Get them out of the parking lots, exactly. And that's sort of what they mean by the new oval.
So there are not necessarily a lot of buildings involved in it.
Nope, it's just green open space.
It's landscaping. You're right up your alley.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
You know, going back to that, how does that developing downriver help the research park? Is there any concern about overpopulating the area, Bill?
Not with people, I don't think. I think we're talking about backing off from the river, basically, throughout the campus, and that's just absolutely fits what we've done up here.
What do you mean by backing off the river?
In other words, right now, when you go down through campus, the levees are right up against the river.
Okay.
You're standing by the stadium. You can't even see the river. And the idea would be to take those levees down or move them, I should say, left and right, give some green space, and which will flood occasionally, and we all know that, and that's okay. And perhaps they'll build some wetlands to retain stormwater and so on. So it'll be a landscape of water and green landscapes combined that'll just be beautiful and very functional, too, for the campus. But it'll be open space. It won't be populated. We've even suggested, and someday it will happen, we've named the Ramsar Wetland of International Importance here at the Olentangy Wetlands. We're on the same list with the Florida Everglades and the Chesapeake Bay, for goodness sakes. It certainly makes sense to me, and we could easily go to Ramsar someday when we get this conduit done, is to go back to them and get the entire stretch from us all the way down to Granger Shores or beyond, who knows. The whole site declared a Ramsar Wetland of International Importance. It's very feasible.
How much does all of this cost, Stephen?
We haven't put a number to it yet. So.
How do you even begin to how do you go about it in stages? What's the first? Are you at stage one now, the planning, obviously?
Well, I think the first stage is to take a look at shifting. Well, one is the removal of the dam. And then the second would be the shifting of Cannon Drive to the west. That move actually benefits the hospital, the med center, in that it creates 12 new acres of buildable land when Cannon shifts to the west. But it also will eliminate the parking and the berm that separates, the campus from the river, and thereby creating park space in a zone for the water to flood without flooding any of our buildings. So I think it's really a win-win situation.
When you remove these dams, what's it like? How long does something like that take?
I think we're still trying to determine that. The city is in the middle of a study right now to understand what the impacts of the removal of the dam will be.
How dependent is all of this on the city removing the dams? Is it absolutely imperative?
I think so.
Yeah. I think that's the linchpin. That's the when that happens, everything else falls in place.
So the missing piece in this conversation then is the city.
Yeah. And it'll happen.
Yeah.
It'll happen.
Yeah. Bill, what about the future of the Wetlands Research Park? What do you see it getting bigger, or as you said, is the world your oyster? You want it all the way down to the Ohio River, or what do you think?
Well, I think the site itself, we're as far as we go, we're at 50 acres here, including the river, and that's pretty landlocked, and it's not going to expand area-wide.
Uh-huh.
What we see as happening here is more and more of our research going on the river. Of course, we have the wetlands on the floodplains. We've studied them to death. We've got hundreds of publications on them. We've learned a lot about creating floodplain systems. We really think we need now to get out on the river, which is why one of the emphasis we're going to be talking about, it will be a boat dock and things like that, too, so that we can do teaching research out there.
So, what do you learn on a river that you're not getting now?
Well, first of all, the absolute first thing we're going to learn is, if we can get out on the river soon, is to be able to watch the river before and after the dam removal.
Okay.
It's a very simple experiment. You take water quality, you look at the fish, you look at the invertebrates, you look at the sediments, and then you take the dam out and you look and see how it's improved, or hopefully improved. So that alone is an invaluable opportunity. The other will be, as we drop the river, when the dam removes, we're going to have all sorts of what we call riparian zones. In other words, areas that used to be underwater will all of a sudden be land 90% of the time. And they'll start to get green. And so we have this wonderful so-called, we call it primary succession in the ecology business, where we'll be able to watch nature recovering from scratch when the land is exposed. And it's incredible laboratory we're going to have out there in the river.
If you're just joining us, this is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820, and we are live at the Wilma H. Schirmeyer Olentangy River Wetland Research Park with Bill Mitch. He's the director of the research park, and also Stephen Folkman. He is the OSU landscape architect, and we're talking about plans to develop the river from the research park. Well, I guess as far as you can get it, but hopefully to the Audubon center down just south of town, or in the south end of the town.
Yeah, I mean, it won't be called the research park, probably south of here, but it'll be a green blue conduit.
But no one can stop you from researching it.
Right.
Right.
Steve, what is your template for something like this? Where do you look to for prior experience with something like this?
I think you look to some of the larger cities that have improved some of their riverfronts. And of course, Sasaki, being the consultant that we've used, has always pointed out Boston as their example. So, yeah, they've utilized Boston as a primary example.
What do you think of as a landscape architect?
What do you mean, what do I think?
When you imagine what it could be like.
Well, I guess I see this wonderful space where people can commute up and down the trail via bicycle or walking, all the way from, Worthington, mm-hmm. Downtown, without, so it's uninterrupted pathways in green space, all the way downtown. I think that would be wonderful.
Now, we're going to talk with some students later about a plan they have, and part of that plan, as far as the development goes, includes a coffee shop. And I like the idea. But what's the idea behind something like that, creating kind of a stopping off point?
Well, our purpose in suggesting the boat docks, and the coffee thought began as an afterthought, and it's just grown from there. But having an entryway, where are you calling the gateway? We've picked up on that term that's been used before, I think, here at Ohio State, a gateway to the river for us to do research and teaching. That was the main impetus for us. We've got a boat parked in the garage right now, right very close to us here, and it's got no place to go. And so we've got that entryway. The idea of the coffee shop sort of came up when we said, well, wait a minute, we're going to have people coming along in kayaks, and they're going to be doing portages through these boats. We have people jogging and bicycling down there, and these are all coffee people, if you will. And so we said, well, this would be a nice little place for them to stop and have a cup of coffee, so it just grew from there.
So you want more people coming to the park?
Yeah. It's great to have. This is one of the busiest bike paths in central Ohio, if not in Ohio, right now. And just lots of people passing through, and so that's why we built an AEP bike path shelter for them to. They can pull in there and inflate their tires with the air that comes from solar energy on the roof of the facility, and basically. Stop for a moment, see nature, see the birds, see, stop and smell the roses, so to speak. So we're going to have all these conduit of people. We thought the coffee shop was a nice idea. But the main thing we really are interested in is being access to the river, having a docking system that can withstand. There's some powerful floods on this river. We've studied it for 14 years. We see this river, and it has very powerful floods, so we'd have to design this, of course, so that it would stand that kind of a pulsing system. And that's what this whole green-blue way is all about. We're not going to have a river like everybody says, well, why don't you do it like San Antonio and put your little shops along the river? And
That
won't work here. The San Antonio, the river is pumped. A lot of people don't know that.
It's fake.
It's fake in a way. And it's very static. It's very predictable. Here you've got these pulses that come down the river. That's a natural feature of rivers. That's fine. You have to design a landscape that fits those pulses. That's what we're talking about. And that's what Mother Nature knows pretty well how to do.
Yeah. Steve?
Well, and I think to add to that is that, some of the other planning elements that we've been working on are a stormwater master plan. And then also the River Corridor Plan and the Academic Core North Plan. And all of these plans have components of stormwater that feed into the river. And so the goal is to modify the quantity of water flowing into the river and then also the quality of the water that flows into the river. And so those are some of the other goals that we have for the river.
How do you modify the quality from the campus?
Well, different techniques. For instance, on main campus, we have a lot less opportunity to have open channels with plant material filtering. But on west campus, for instance, we have all the open land, and one of the ideas is to bring back three of the historic tributaries that fed the Olentangy and create a working landscape around those tributaries. And what I mean by a working landscape is something that where we plant it heavily enough that it can help, one, absorb some of the flooding, and two, filter out some of the water and it also would be conduits for pedestrian and bicycle circulation.
The plan envisions a lot more pedestrian traffic, a lot less automobile traffic.
Yeah.
How do you do that in a place like Central Ohio?
Well, that's a very good question. we'll see.
many minds have pondered this recently.
Yeah.
Trying to figure out what you do when you're talking about changing it all the way down to the Audubon Center. How do you change the downtown river corridor?
Well, I think when we suggested this idea of the Olentangy-Scioto corridor, first of all, we thought it was symbolic. We, on the northern end of this, are dedicated to higher education. We're a research institution. We teach university courses, whereas the Audubon Center, which they created after coming up and talking with us a lot, the Audubon Center on Whittier Peninsula is for K-12. It's for the, and it's a perfect marriage of the two education systems that we have in this country. So it's symbolic in that sense, but it's very important that we connect those two. So going through the city, that's a little more problematic, but lo and behold, they're already doing it. They call it the Scioto Mall, and they're it'll be more concrete. It's not as much green, but they're trying to put some riparian zones where they can, given that it's a very heavy urban setting. There are already pieces to this pie already in place, and all we're saying is take that dam out and do a few more things, and it's going to happen. So the urban area would be the most difficult one to deal with normally, because that's very expensive to move concrete around and to push back rivers. But it's already being done to a certain extent by what they refer to as the Scioto Mall. This is already happening, I guess is what I'm saying. Let's just call it something.
What's the timeline, Stephen?
I don't think there is a timeline at this point.
Okay. Well, there is a timeline to the show, and that means we're coming up to our next break. I want to say thank you very much to Stephen Volkman, OSU landscape architect. Appreciate you being on the show.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it.
And Bill Mitch, thanks for joining us today. We're going to bring in some students and talk more about that coffee house and get to that in a few minutes.
Okay.
Thanks again, though, for being with us.
Thank you, Ann, for having me.
We're going to take a short break now. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820. NPR News.
As a second-generation business owner, new father, and musician at night, keeping informed about the world is necessary and difficult. Whether it's Terry Gross at lunch, Bluegrass Ramble on the weekend, or the BBC at night, WOSU is always on my radio. This is Matthew Sullivan, and WOSU is my source for the information I need to be an informed business owner and father, and the entertainment and music I need to unwind my busy brain.
And you're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News. In 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, hour two of the program will be here, and we'll hear about the amazing characteristics of domestic and wild birds and the special relationship between humans and birds with naturalist and author Cy Montgomery. That discussion begins at 11 right here on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Support for WOSU comes from the law firm Isaac Brandt Ledman & Teeter, offering legal services to Central Ohio since 1936. Isaac Brandt Ledman & Teeter, big enough to win, small enough to care. On the web at isaacbrandt.com.
WOSU Public Media presents the Columbus Metropolitan Club's Wednesday Forum. Today at noon, Ohio Attorney General Richard Cordray discusses consumer advocacy and taking on Wall Street. Visit columbusmetroclub.org for tickets and more information. Currently 79 degrees in downtown Columbus at 10:40, sunshine today and a high of 85 degrees, clear skies tonight and a low of 62. All Sides continues on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. You know my penchant for sound. I love sound with the show, and those are leopard frogs, and they are to mark our location today. We're live at the Wilma H. Schirmeyer Olentangy River Wetland Research Park. There is a symposium today on developing the river corridor through the city, from the university through the city, and part of that plan involves the work of some OSU civil engineering students. So joining us now for our final segment this hour is Michael Behrens and Jessica Wood. They're OSU civil engineering students who are part of a group that later today will make a presentation at the symposium on how they envision developing the property at the Olentangy Wetlands Research Park around the Olentangy River. Michael Behrens, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Ann.
And also Jessica Wood, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So your group has proposed putting in boat docks for researchers and a coffee house for bicyclists and I imagine researchers as well, and others who use the Olentangy bike trail along the river. How did this come about?
Well, I guess our part of the project is really kind of our senior civil engineering capstone design project, and the project's supposed to be kind of like real-world engineering experience. And the three parts of the project that were worked on, the boat docks, the coffee shop, and then also adding some new pathways along the river to connect these docks together, started back in autumn quarter of this year. So there were about a group of three groups worked on each of those projects. And then Jessica and I came on during winter quarter and kind of took where they were going and kind of worked with it. And then finally this quarter, we're kind of putting it all three of the projects together and kind of presenting it out to the public. So all in all, about 20 to 30 students over the course of the year have probably worked on these projects.
Well, tell us about it, Jessica. What are we talking about in a large sense?
Well, what we are initially given the project to design a old mill coffee shop, and then there's a boat dock, and then there's a pervious pavement path that will be along the Olentangy River.
Okay, and what does pervious mean?
Pervious means that when it rains, the water can go through the pavement, and so that it will eliminate drainage into the wetlands area.
So now I understand that the coffee shop wasn't necessarily part of the assignment, but someone thought it would be a good idea. Why? Tell us about the coffee shop idea and what it'll involve.
Well, the coffee shop is designed with the old mill look so that it would fit into the wetlands area. There's already existing buildings that have that look. And what it will be is it'll be a self-sustained coffee shop where there won't need to be any staff. And there'll be vending machines where runners and kayakers can come by and get water, instant coffee, and other snacks. And there'll also be indoor and outdoor seating for them. And we'll also have a wireless internet where if researchers or students come by, they can do their studies for it.
How big will it be?
It's about 1,500 square feet, including like an outdoor sitting deck area. And then I think we really went with like the coffee shop idea was because, you know, the boat docks are for the research, and then there's also for kayaks and things like that. But, you know, and this is my fourth year at OSU, and this is the first time I've ever heard about the wetlands. Someone would have told me during my sophomore and junior years that there's this international wetlands research center here. I would have said, well, where is it? Where could you have something like that in Columbus? So we kind of wanted the coffee shop there to kind of like encourage people to come and like come by the river and see the coffee shop and stop by it, and they would also be able to see the wetlands area as well. And we also envision using the coffee shop area as kind of a gathering space for meetings for environmental groups like FLO or the Audubon Society. If they want to hold meetings, they can also use that space as well. So it's really about increasing awareness to the wetlands area and getting people to kind of stay here and see the great research that goes on here.
You know, when I think of civil engineers, I don't usually think about building boat docks and coffee shops. Is this something, Jessica, that you planned on doing when you came to school here?
No, it wasn't. I was very surprised that we were given the project, but all in all, it has been a great learning experience, and I've learned so much more than you could have even imagined about the wetlands area.
Yeah, what are some of the things you have to take into consideration for a project like this? It's different than if you're building sewer lines through an urban center, I imagine.
Right. I mean, one thing with, like, the coffee shops is going to be right along the river. Obviously, flooding is something there to take into consideration. So the coffee shop will actually be elevated, so it kind of sit on these wooden pile piers, and it'll be lifted out of the floodplain. So that's something you have to take into consideration. Also with the boat docks, although Jessica and I didn't specifically work on that project, the group that did that, they had to go out and take river flow measurements, and they took some measurements about what's the, you know, the force that the water is going to put on these boat docks, and what exactly do you have to do to make sure those boat docks will stay in place. So there's a lot of factors that go into it that a lot of times that something like Jessica and I, who are structural majors, may not really have thought about. So it's a great learning experience.
Now, your group is you're selling the project now.
Yes.
So what does that involve?
Later in the evening, we'll be giving a presentation to propose the coffee shop. We want to be able to expose what we're doing so that other students will gain knowledge and be able to, in the future, come back to the wetlands and say, oh, well, I had a part in that, or I remember looking at this and seeing all the work that we've done on the wetlands.
Now, I know you've only had a few weeks with the new union that took a long time to build. This could be many years down the road, this development they're talking about. As students here, undergrads, what do you think about this idea of developing the river? Have you ever connected very much with it before?
To be honest, no. I never really, I know the Olentangy River Trail is there, but I never use it very much. And, the river is just kind of something that people joke about, like, don't go near it, you'll get sick or something like that. And when it rains, be careful with, the sewage overflow and that sort of thing. So it's kind of, the river has always been kind of like an afterthought for me, and it's never really been a focal point of the campus, on campus tours or anything like that. They never talk about having the Olentangy River right here. They never talk about what research opportunities are available, and available not just for the research staff here, but also for students. Students can also be able to use the docks and other things like that and really get a lot of real-world engineering experience in any type of field, kind of like we're doing here. So it'd be great for students.
What do you think, Jessica, about opening up the river?
I think it's an excellent idea. I've actually used the trail quite often for running along the path, and I've noticed for about 12 miles of the run, there's no water stops. And I think that by putting the coffee shop in, it's an excellent way for people to get water or coffee and just attract people to the wetlands area.
Do you think really, though, that students will come to the river if they build it?
Yes, I really do.
What about turning the river into the new oval someday in the future, like at other universities have that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that would be great. I think any type of green space you can put in there because, some days you go to the oval, and, it's just packed.
Well, it makes so much more sense to sunbathe by a river than it does in the middle.
Yeah, it would be so much nicer to have that. Sometimes the oval is the focal point, and sometimes there's just so much activity going on there that it's kind of difficult to kind of find your own space to kind of just walk around and enjoy the views. I think the Olentangy River would offer better, kind of more park-like setting for the university than kind of the oval.
What about costs? Did you have to figure the costs in all of this?
We did.
No one ever wants to talk about that.
I mean, we kind of did rough estimates, but we are students, so a lot of the factors that are going into it, we don't really know a lot about. And then, our project was more kind of an initial investigation into it, and right now we're kind of at the point of getting it out into the public and kind of see, proposing the coffee shop is great, but what's the feedback we're going to get from students? What's the feedback we're going to get tonight from Dr. Mitch and from others around the area? And if it's something that, people are very interested in and something that they want, there have to be a little bit more investigation going into cost and that kind of factors.
Now,
well,
is Dr. Gee going to be there tonight when you present?
Dr. Gee is scheduled to show up at about 5:30, and we're taking the stage at about 5, so he'll kind of catch the tail end.
Well, if you drag it out.
Yeah.
he'll
kind of catch the conclusion of it, and then I think he's going to talk right after us, so he'll probably have a few words to say about that.
Now, the bike rest, or the bike house, or whatever they call it, shelter, the bike shelter where you can pump up your tires and that kind of thing, that's solar powered now.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The coffee shop requires more power. Mm-hmm. It'll be solar powered, but also wind powered, and I was sort of surprised about that. It's breezy, but I don't think of at the riverbank as being particularly windy. How does that work?
Well, what they'll have is there's a vertical windmills, and instead of going like this, or instead of they rotate vertically instead of horizontally, and they're
like
a lot
instead
more
of like a pinwheel they,
it's kind of like a helix type thing.
Okay.
Yeah. And they'll they actually will rotate so that they'll capture the wind at whichever direction the wind is coming from. So if we put two of those on top of the coffee house roof, it would actually – it does make a big impact on saving on electricity, so we wouldn't have to tap into the city for electricity.
And would people actually be able to plug in their computers? I mean, would you get power?
Yes.
Yeah,
that
you
way
get
too?
Power for that. Yeah, and then the wind turbine things, you know, you're talking about the wind speed. They actually only require 4 miles per hour. Wind is only the minimum required speed required to get them turning. So it actually doesn't require as much wind as some people may think. So
and if they're turning, they're generating?
Yep, if they're turning, they're generating power.
Mm-hmm. What about solar? Does it matter that we have the cloudiest region in the country?
We investigated using solar power for the coffee shop because one thing we were kind of worried about with, you know, the bike shelter has the solar power as well. But one thing with the coffee shop is we wanted to put it in – it's kind of more in a heavily wooded area.
Okay.
And we didn't – wanted to keep that setting in there, so we wanted to keep, you know, trees overhead of there. So we're a little bit worried about the amount of sunlight that could reach the roof of the coffee shop. So right now we don't really have – we're not planning on using solar power for that, but it's always an option that can be done.
Can you describe for listeners if they're accustomed to riding their bikes or walking down the Olentangy Trail through the wetlands, where would the coffee house be located in relationship to the wetlands?
The coffee shop would be located like it's right across the pedestrian bridge that you go across when you cross the Olentangy from the east bank to the west bank. So right after you cross across there, there'll be new pathways that will direct you to the two docks that are going to be built, and then the coffee shop's going to be there right next to where the current Lowhead Dam is, right next to the wetlands area.
Now, you were talking about getting creating a water turbine system, and I thought that was assuming the Fifth Avenue Dam remains, but it's not. It doesn't depend on that. How does that work?
For the water turbine system, we were planning on using the Lowhead Dam that's there. There's a drop about 4 to 5 feet that's there. So it's kind of like a micro hydro turbine. It's not very large, and you kind of place it there, and it takes the kinetic energy from that drop in the water flow, and it will turn a generator, and then cables will run from there to the coffee shop, and that will kind of generate the electricity for there. I know they were talking about taking out the Fifth Avenue Dam. I'm not sure if that Lowhead Dam is also part of one that they want to take out. But if they do take those out, you can still use hydroelectric power, but it would be a little bit more complicated. You'd have to kind of build like a side channel to kind of direct the river flow to the actual turbine system itself. But we kind of envisioned using two wind turbines and two of the water turbines to generate the vast majority, if not all, of the electrical power for the coffee shop.
What are the challenges in a project like this?
One kind of major challenge for us, we found out a lot of times, is, you know, it's one thing that we're civil engineering students, and a lot of things, especially about the wind energy turbine and
nature.
The water turbine and nature type of things, is not something that we're too familiar with, so it takes a lot of research on the internet. Another issue was kind of like regulatory issues. You know, you just can't put a water turbine on the river and just say we want to do this. So we had to do a lot of contact with the Army Corps of Engineers and the EPA and kind of see what are the possibilities that we can do actually on the river and what are the limitations we have for putting something so close to a river.
I would imagine, given the increasing emphasis on green building and LEED certification and being, you know, one with the environment, that this is a great project compared to what you might have done. What are some of the other projects, for instance, that other students were assigned to do? The classics or?
All of their projects involve, you know, civil engineering. I know that there's some groups I think there's a group this quarter that's investigating putting a bridge over Lake Erie to connect Ohio to Canada, which is kind of like this grand big scheme type of thing, which is kind of interesting. There's some other groups that are investigating some more kind of I guess the general public would probably think that they're kind of boring, a little more technical things like concrete piping and plastic piping type of things for sewers and things like that.
But so. You think it's fascinating?
Yeah, some people think it might be fascinating, yeah. But I think we got pretty lucky with our type of project that we got assigned to. I mean, the green energy things are, you know, it's something that President Guy has really talked about, and it's, you know, it's the future of the university, but it's also the future of the nation, you know, moving to green energy.
They're talking about reducing automobile traffic on the campus eventually and changing kind of how people use, maybe increasing pedestrian and bicycle traffic. How do you think that'll go over?
I think it'll go over very well, actually, since I know just riding your bike on campus or down High Street, it's a challenge because there aren't any bike paths.
It's a challenge driving down High Street.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Both the bikers and the cars get annoyed with each other. So by opening up the bike path, it'll free up the driving lanes, and also it'll be a lot safer for the bikers.
Yeah, and also it's expensive to have a car here on campus, you know, paying for parking and all those things. So it'd be great to, like, have better access for bikers and for walkers and make it easier to navigate the campus without having to worry about a car.
So can you have a car on campus when you're a freshman or sophomore?
I don't think you can when you're a freshman unless you live in the area and are commuting. I think you can do it. But sophomore, I think you can get it, but I think there's very, very limited passes available for parking, and usually even then you have to park, you know, all the way on West Campus and still have, you know, 10-15 minute walk to campus. So really doing anything to get away from the car-centric point of view for the university, and, you know, you don't want all these parking garages around campus. You want the green space.
Right. Do you use a bike?
I don't have a bike. I walk
everywhere.
I have a bike,
yes.
Okay. We are out of time now. I want to thank my guests, Jessica Wood and Michael Behrens. They are OSU civil engineering students. They're part of a group that later today will make a presentation here at the Olentangy River Wetland Research Park on developing the property here around the Olentangy River. It'll include, a coffee shop and definitely some docks for the researchers and kayakers who will maybe someday get to enjoy the river as it was intended, I suppose. Thanks a lot for joining us, Michael.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And Jessica, thanks for being with us. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on WOSU 820. This is listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus, and streaming on the web at WOSU.org, WOSU 820, NPR News.
You are a violent man, my friend.
After starring in the series The Shield, Walton Goggins is starring in Justified as a white supremacist who now claims to be born again and preaches to the federal marshal pursuing him.
At one moment, you could be breaking into the home of a fugitive. And the very next moment, you could be facing your final judgment.
Walton Goggins on the next Fresh Air.
And Fresh Air begins at noon today, right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. Hear more from WOSU anytime at WOSU.org. Listen to All Sides with Ann Fisher whenever you want with the online archive. Podcast new and archive shows from all the guests and topics. Podcast All Sides at WOSU.org/allsides. And you are a continuous listener to WOSU, so be a continuous supporter by becoming a sustaining member today. As a sustaining member, your gift automatically renews, saving you and WOSU time and money. Give $20, $50, or $100 a month, and your sustaining membership will also help keep on-air fundraising to a minimum. To be a sustaining member, just go online, wosu.org/sustainer. It's 80 degrees in downtown Columbus, sunshine today and a high of 85, clear skies tonight and a low of 62 degrees, sunshine and a high of 85 for Thursday and a chance of rain Thursday night.
Birds are special. They're individuals. They have feelings, too. They're just different from us. Very different. Award-winning author Cy Montgomery has written a new book interpreting those differences for the rest of us. In Birdology, she explains why her flock of chickens visits their favorite neighbors, and she introduces two baby hummingbirds to us that have beat the odds just by getting hatched. Maybe you've seen the cockatoo Snowball, whose dance video went viral on YouTube. And then there are the hawks, Fire and Smoke. All of these birds play a role in Birdology. Join us in a minute with Cy Montgomery on All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.